better off.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 165 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I'm joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Surovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So last week we were all, Mets are back, baby. And this week it's like, well,
Mets are back, baby.
Same old Mets.
They lost two series to mediocre teams last week.
To call them mediocre.
They're the worst two teams in the league.
Yeah, in the National League.
National League, yes.
In the Cubs and the Rockies, both, I believe, last place teams, yes.
Yes.
And so they lost to two. They lost two out of three to two last place teams. This time, the offense remains mostly fine. But it couldn't overcome the bad pitching this time. They pitched really badly last week, and Verlander in particular had a really bad outing against the Rockies, which was especially frustrating. It was Coors.
McGill was the bigger culprit because he sucked twice last week.
McGill did suck two different times last week. And I mean, Verlander, as bad as he was, did manage to gut through five innings, even though he was bad. McGill couldn't even manage that either time, I don't think. Nope. I think it was like four. It was four innings was and then three and two thirds.
Yeah, and then four. Yeah.
And then four. So that's just like not going to cut it. I mean, it's also expectations minus reality, right? Like McGill was objectively worse, but like, you know, it's Tyler McGill. It's a fifth starter. It wasn't even acceptable by fifth starter standards, but Justin Verlander is supposed to be the ace of the staff. He's making lots of money. Not that the money really matters, but you know, there's expectations upon him. And
especially after Scherzer looked so good the day before.
That is a small silver lining from this week, which is that Max Scherzer looked very good in his most recent outing. But it's just like, it feels like lightning in a bottle to get Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander going at the same time. So it's just like really, really back and forth. Like Verlander has literally alternated good and bad starts in his first, whatever, four starts.
That means we're getting a good one.
Yeah. Hopefully that means we're getting a good one this time around. But yeah, it's been frustrating. He's literally went bad start, good start, bad start, good start, bad start since he's come back. Max did shove. And the other encouraging thing is that Carlos Carrasco had an encouraging outing, but that's about the only silver lining you can take away on the pitching side right now, or from last week, that is. As we speak, as we podcast, we are recording this on Tuesday night, May 30th. The Mets are in a pitching duel with the Phillies at the moment. The Mets are up 1-0 on a Francisco Lindor solo homer, and Kodai Senga just completed seven innings. So
he pretty much shoved today, too.
He really shoved today. He didn't walk anybody. He struck out. How many strikeout? Eight, seven?
Maybe? I can't tell.
It was seven the last I looked, but I didn't pay
attention. He just struck out Schwarber, so I don't know if that's the seventh or the eighth.
Nine.
No, okay then.
Nine.
Basically eight, Allison.
he gave up one hit. And he struck out nine through seven innings, which is just, yeah, this is one of his best starts that he's had. I mean, he did strike out 12 in that other start that he had, but like, this is when, like, when Senga is on, this is the good Senga. Like, this is it, and it's like electric to watch. So we do have that going right now tonight, but the Mets could still easily lose this game. They're only up by one.
He wasn't awful at Wrigley. He just was all over the place, but he limited the damage.
He walked a lot of guys.
We're starting to understand his rhythms better, I think, in terms of like getting him the rest, you know, getting him comfortable. I think that's all really important, and we can see when that is in place that he's doing well.
Yeah, his deal is that he needs extra rest, and when he's on, he's basically unhittable. But he has trouble controlling the ghost fork. When he can't control it, it's not going to be a good time. He can usually limit damage, but he'll walk a lot of guys when he can't control it. So, but you know, that's why he's roughly performing like a third starter, which is what the Mets needed from him. The problem is that they're not getting what they need from other guys. Yeah. So
that's the problem with McGill too. Like, you're constantly waving the white flag, whether it's him or Peterson, that leaves no room for error for the rest of the rotation.
Yeah, that's been the issue, is they needed one of those two guys to be good, and both of them have been pretty bad. Like, Peterson has been unrosterable, and McGill is getting there.
Like, if you can't even get your fifth starter through four innings, that's not a starter, that's an opener.
Yeah, then that's, yeah, then you're just a reliever.
Yeah.
And not a good one.
No.
No. And I mean, they should consider, honestly, like, doing some sort of opener piggyback situation with that fifth starter spot, but they probably won't do that.
It seems like it's always the third inning. It's either the first inning where McGill falls apart or the third inning where he falls apart. So he could be like your bridge guy to get to like Ottavino and Robertson, since the rest of like your bridge dudes are awful.
I mean, to be fair to McGill, he was not assisted by his defense in his most recent outing.
Well, I also blame Buck for that. Why do you put Starling Marte in center in Coors Field?
That was a terrible decision on Buck Showalter's part to put. I mean, like, I understand Brandon Nimmo can't play every single game. I understand that. But you got to choose a better spot to rest your center fielder than the most expansive ballpark in all of baseball to put Starling Marte, who has not looked particularly good in right field this year, let alone center.
And hasn't played center in like 2 years.
Right. Yeah.
So that was not a good choice, and it manifested itself in the game. He made a key defensive miscue that cost the Mets arguably the game. So, yeah, that was an issue, and Tyler McGill was not assisted by his defense, both in the form of Starling Marte playing a poor center field and Gary Sanchez catching badly. He had, like, there were, like, three, I can't remember if it was three wild pitches or, like, a pass ball and two wild pitches, but basically they all should have been pass balls, more or less. They were balls
that... I mean, at least he's done now. At least he's gone.
They were balls that the Mets other catchers, provided that Tomas Nito's eyes are better, there are balls that the Mets other catchers would have blocked. And yeah, Gary Sanchez is now off the roster. When Tomas Nito was activated from the injured list, Gary Sanchez was designated for assignment. He has since been claimed on waivers by the Padres, who are actually in a dire catching situation, unlike the Mets, who now somehow have an embarrassment of riches, which is good, but also concerning, because you kind of, the designating Gary Sanchez for assignment move was obvious, and something that I think that, you know, people who have Wilpon PTSD and stuff like that were nervous about whether they would do that, because especially this season, because they've been like doing weird roster manipulation stuff where they've been refusing to DFA guys without options. Like, they just DFA'd Jimmy Yakabonis because they need to activate him off the injured list or DFA him. And so they DFA'd him. but they had kept guys like that on the roster for too long because they don't have options anymore. Same thing with guys like Tommy Hunter and Steven Nogosic. They've kept around because they don't have options anymore, and they're scared to expose them to waivers for some reason.
Gary Sanchez wants them on their team either.
Right.
No.
I mean, Gary Sanchez was always going to get claimed, which is why I think people were nervous that the Mets weren't going to put him on waivers, because like catching is something that is always needed around the league. And so, yeah, it's not a surprise that he got claimed to me, but the Mets do not need him anymore. So it's really fine. That was the easy choice.
The Mets don't need Steven Nogosic either.
Yeah, the problem is that his replacement is not very obvious at this time. Like, I hate to say it because he's my dude that I picked at the beginning of the season, but the guy who would be up here, I think, if he was pitching any good at all in AAA is John Curtis, but he's pitching awful in AAA. It's the same thing. It's the David Peterson syndrome, although David Peterson has pitched better in AAA of late. Like, if he was any good at all, he'd be here, but he's pitching awful. So they don't really have anybody else to replace Steven Nogosic. I also think that they just don't want to expose him to waivers, which is silly because he would make it through waivers. But yeah, like, there isn't their best AAA reliever right now is Muckenhern. So that's your alternative. They could do that. They should be turning these spots. They claimed that they wanted to. They claimed at the beginning of the season that their ideal was to have two spots in the bullpen. They wanted optionable relievers so they could churn the bullpen. And then they clogged up the bullpen with non-optionable relievers and haven't churned them. So
wouldn't you rather have good pitchers?
Yeah, in theory.
If you get to choose, which in cool. the off season you do.
Yeah. Like
that's what I would do.
It's been rough. I thought that they had built sufficient bullpen depth. I was not correct. Obviously, you know, like Robertson has been great, although he's been showing his human side lately. Not bad, but like, you know, giving up runs occasionally lately.
Not otherworldly.
Ottavino's been fine. And outside of that, it's been an issue. Like Drew Smith was good for a while, but Drew Smith has reemerged lately, and Jeff Brigham looked good for a while, but he's been bad again. It's like, you know, this is what these like basically middle relievers are like. This is what happens when you build your entire bullpen out of them.
Can we try the churf in the bullpen?
Could. Please. Or as like an opener, they could piggyback the yes. with McGill or something. I don't know.
I would say at least try it, since nothing else has worked at this point. Why not?
Why not indeed?
If McGill can only go two innings before falling apart, then try a piggyback situation. You wouldn't be ruining the bullpen, because if either one of them falters, they're both starters, so you can leave them in there for multiple innings.
Yeah. Sadly, I have a feeling we'll sooner see David Peterson once more, which would be... We are going to see someone, because...
We've progressed past the need for David Peterson.
Have we, though?
No.
Sadly, I'm not sure we have. And we are going to see someone, I think, soon, because... if I recall, I forget which beat reporter tweeted this, but the Mets switched Senga and to today to give him extra rest, and then they're going to give him extra rest, I think, again. So the Mets are going to need somebody I'm literally counting on my fingers, like Sunday. Next time Senga's spot comes, they're going to need someone again. And none of the other guys are going to be on regular rest. So I think that they're going to have to pitch somebody else, whether that be Peterson or Lucchese or bullpen game, which I don't have faith that any of those will go particularly well. But
I mean, the Mets in particular, I think, should not at all be doing a bullpen game when their bullpen is constantly overtaxed to begin with.
Yeah,
and
buddy.
Also not good.
Yeah, not going to go well. So yeah, that's the situation with the pitching staff. It's still bad. They're the only pitching staff. That had a worse ERA in May than the Mets was the A's, who are on track to be the worst baseball team of all time.
Which so. I feel a little possessive of.
I do too.
I do not want them to be worse than the 62 Mets. That's our thing.
Yes.
We had it first.
That's a Mets-y record, damn it.
If they take it away from us, then that is what it is. But I'm going on record as it's mine. I want it.
That's
because
fair.
They were talking about this during the game, and Keith said it's time to move on, that the 62 Mets need to move. Like, it's like he's like, that's a record you don't want. But then Howie, I guess, sent a message to Gare and said, no, that's a Metsy record. You can't take that from us.
Keith made the point, which I probably do appreciate, which is that the 62 Mets themselves don't particularly want that record. And like, fine.
Yeah.
I respect their different beliefs than me.
So I'm on Keith's side on this. So
that's fair.
Not to disagree with you two, but I don't want that record anymore. I don't want my franchise to be known for its mediocrity. Because I, you know, like, I feel like we frequently, or like, you know, rival fan bases in general, not just Mets fans. I just know Mets fans best. Frequently will crap all over the Phillies for being the losingest franchise of all time. And it's very fun to do that. But I'm not sure they enjoy being known that way. And I don't enjoy being known, like, one of the fun facts about my franchise being that it was one of that it has the worst team of all time in it. I am happy to let someone else take that mantle. That's fine by me.
But like Gara was saying, that's what they were known for, and that's what endeared people to them, was they were the lovable losers.
I think the difference. I think the difference between Gary and Keith in that debate was that Gary was talking about it like a fan, because he's a fan. Yeah. And I think that, like, a lot of fans agree with him, like you two agree with him. And Keith was talking about it like a player. Because he was a player, and he was sharing the perspective of the 62 Mets players who do not want that distinction upon their careers any longer. And we're talking about how, like, it was not fun to lose all those games. So they were saying, like, we're not rooting for the A's to lose because we know how shitty it feels, but we would be pleased if we didn't have that record anymore.
But my former boss was from Detroit, and for the longest time, the Lions were the only team that ever went 0-16, and she got so mad when the Browns did it too, and she goes, that was my record, damn it, and you just took that from me.
See, my brother is a Miami Dolphins fan, and he has, like, the opposite, like, of the, you know, the perfect season, very defensive of that.
Probably makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
Well, he can thank the Giants for preserving that.
Yes. Yes, he can. I'm sure he does. But yeah, so yeah, it's a divisive point, I think. I'm on the side of Keith and the players, but I understand why fans feel protective of it. Like, you know, Metsiness is in our DNA, and that is, and the 62 Mets are very Metsy.
We all have to cope with our reality in one way or another.
And I mean, I think, like, what makes it
feels,
I think what makes it more, air quotes, permissible for the 1962 Mets to be the worst team ever is because they were an expansion team. So, like, it's kind of just like, yeah, what do you expect? Like, the expansion team is going to struggle to start. But the A's taking that record from them would be extra embarrassing, I think, because, like, they're not an expansion team and they're kind of low-key doing this on purpose. On the ownership level, obviously, yeah, the players are trying their hardest. They're not doing it on purpose. On the ownership and front office level, they're doing it on purpose, which is really embarrassing. The 62 Mets were not doing it on purpose.
No, they tried.
They tried. An attempt was made. So the last sort of Mets story I want to talk about, before we get into some other baseball stuff that is going to be sad and maddening to discuss, I figured I would bring up a more lighthearted thing to sort of, you know, cleanse the palate a little bit. We like to alternate good things and bad things on this podcast.
It's a roller coaster.
Exactly. So a fun little story that came out last week that I just want to highlight, because I think it's fun, in The Athletic, was about Buck Showalter's wardrobe. And I found this incredibly endearing. So for those of you who haven't read it yet or don't have access to The Athletic, basically a summary of it is that everyone who watches the Mets and or has seen Buck Showalter in his other managerial jobs knows that he, like, never wears, like, the team jersey the way that other managers do. He's always wearing the jacket. And recently, or I forget exactly when, like, the rule changed, but, like, you know, in the past, like, couple decades or so, the league, like, tightened up the rules governing what could be worn on the field by on-field staff. And so you have to wear, like, MLB issued stuff. And so what Showalter has done to sort of, like, skirt this rule, and he said, like, the league probably hates me for this, but I don't care, basically, is that he does technically wear MLB-issued stuff, but none of it is new stuff. He wears, like, previously okayed, like, items from years and years ago that were, like, grandfathered in before this rule existed. And he's like sure that they will close this loophole after he's done managing specifically because of him, but he does this on purpose. He literally sends the clubby out to go to yard sales and thrift shops to find old Mets stuff that's like grandfathered into this rule.
Oh, Buck. Like, that's dedication to really flouting the rules.
Yep. And then he finds these jackets and he like tailors them afterwards so they fit properly. And like he also like removes the lining from them so that they're like cool for the summer so that he can wear like a jacket even when it's like 90 degrees out.
Oh, jeez. He's such a grandpa.
It's so funny. And all the players talk about how he's like low key really into fashion because he's like very particular about his finds. And like there's a particular pocket that he likes to have like sewn in the jacket. Oh, my God. It's the craziest stuff. The secret pocket, it's called. It used to be for cigarettes.
I'm a big fan of whatever flavor of moderate neurodiversity Buck has, because he is so particular about particular things.
Yep.
And I can just, and it makes perfect sense. Like, I just want him to sit there and explain all of his preferences to me so I can be like, yeah, oh man, totally. Yeah. Love that pocket. Love that, you know, video review guy. Like, everything that he seems to be picky about works out in our favor. So yeah, big fan.
Yeah, sorry. I apologize. It's not the jacket that has the special pocket. It's his pants. And Wayne Kirby said everyone gives him a hard time about the pocket. And the article says Showalter's pants have a special sewn in pocket on the front called a stopwatch pocket. Decades ago, it was more commonplace and made for easy storage for players and managers to house their cigarettes. Showalter said former Yankees manager Billy Martin moved the pocket to the pants after they got in trouble with the league for the cigarette pocket on the inside of the chest. And Showalter said that's the way the pants were made for the Yankees back then. I don't ask for the pocket now, it's just there.
Pocket. No women are out there asking why Buck cares about his pockets, I would just like to say.
It's true. Yes. Buck Showalter, handshake emoji, me. I wish my pockets. Pants had better pockets. Women everywhere are asking for pockets.
Please. No, does he show it off? Like when people like ask him about it, like, look, it has an extra pocket.
Like women do with every box. Dress. Thanks.
Yeah. Yep.
My favorite part was I put a few other things in there, Showalter said, declining to say exactly what. Like, oh.
Yeah, okay. Oh, what's he hiding?
I'm going to go and put my money on snacks.
Yeah, probably snacks.
Yeah.
That's what I would do with my pockets.
Like sunflower seeds,
which I don't.
Yeah. I mean, you might need a little pick-me-up during the game, so you want to have your snacks handy.
Yeah. But yeah, I just thought that that article was incredibly endearing, and while we all may have our issues with Buck's lineup choices, bullpen management, various other things, putting Starling Marte in center field and Coors Field, there, like, things like this just make me, like, love him anyway. Like, I just kind of, like, it minimizes his, like, failings his strategic failings as a manager. Because at least he's, like,
I'm going to go out on a limb and say Starling Marte doesn't see a lot more center field than Coors Field.
No.
I'm going to go ahead and guess that that's not going to happen again.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. The all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Whether you're selling flaky salt or fine art prints, Shopify covers all your sales channels to simplify selling online and in person. Plus, they provide industry-leading tools and 24/7 support to ignite your growth. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. To sign up, visit shopify.co.uk/podcast23, all lowercase.
And now for today's fun football scores. Nerves nil, friends made 11.
Goals 4, giggles 17.
Wheelchair access 1, feeling left out 0.
Celebrations 3, high fives 21.
McDonald's Fun Football. Free football coaching for all kids aged 5 to 11. Search McDonald's Football to find out more.
So now that we've done that fun little, variety segment, we'll move on to our baseball segment this week, which obviously front and center around baseball. major story is still new developments in the Dodgers Pride Night story. We talked about this last week. Obviously, the background is that the Dodgers disinvited the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, an LGBTQ plus activist group from Pride Night over concerns. I use that in air quotes. Concern trolling from Marco Rubio and the Catholic League, which is basically just Bill Donahue, about like the fact that they use that the sisters use Catholic imagery, and they were, you know, highly offended by this, and Dodgers disinvited them for that reason. And then, you know, pride groups started LA based local, actually people who, like, you know, are part of the community started pulling out of Pride Night. The Dodgers hopefully realized their error, or in my mind, mostly just realized that this was costing them money, probably, and re-invited the sisters to Pride. So, of course, that caused a backlash from the Catholic contingent. So after the Dodgers re-invited the sisters, I feel like, you know, the major development here that is especially disappointing, of course, the same people who were upset to begin with are going to be upset again. And that's, you know, that is what it is. I don't care what Marco Rubio thinks about the Dodgers, quite frankly. But the
I don't care what Marco Rubio thinks about anything.
About anything. The more disappointing thing is that it was kind of came out that, well, I'll rewind. About 2 days ago, I think. Forgive me if my timeline is slightly off. Time is a flat circle. Clayton Kershaw tweeted about a like Christian Faith and Family Day that was happening at Dodger Stadium. I forget when, like later in June, in July. I can't remember the exact date. But he basically tweeted like, come out to the ballpark on this day for Christian Faith and Family Day. Or whatever. He made no reference to Pride Night. He just tweeted about the Faith and Family Day. But obviously, everybody sort of picked up on the very odd timing of this. At the time, I wanted to give Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers the benefit of the doubt, because a lot of teams have Christian, have faith-based nights, whether it be specifically Christian faith-based nights or just non-denominational faith nights. And obviously, like, those in and of themselves are not a problem. It's like any other heritage night, you know?
No gay person has ever called up a baseball team and screamed at them to disinvite faith groups. Exactly. I would just like to point out.
Exactly. We've never had protests outside ballparks over Christian Faith and Family Day before.
And this is something
to be clear that the Dodgers had been doing for years, like prior to the pandemic, and it kind of just like trailed off during the pandemic. And other teams have done this. They've been doing it for years, whatever, not an issue. And so I had kind of like thought, I had hoped, giving Clayton Kershaw and the Dodgers the benefit of the doubt, that this was already on the calendar for the Dodgers for this year, and that Kershaw was just advertising it maybe in response, which already would have been kind of crappy, like, you know, a crappy thing, but at least it's just like, it's already a thing that's happening. And he's like, here's a reminder. No. That's not what happened. What we later learned is that Clayton Kershaw was one of the people who was gravely offended by the Dodgers inviting the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence to Pride, and said that he disagreed with their decision to invite them. And in response, he sought to announce the team's relaunch of Christian Faith and Family Day. He had like an all players meeting about it. And then they launched this Christian Faith and Family Day. So this Christian Faith and Family Day was actually a direct response to what the Dodgers decided to do with Pride Night and inviting the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. So that was the shitty part of it, and made me.
And you wonder why, looking at baseball, you think like, why are there no out major league players? Because statistically, certainly some of them are gay. When you have a team leader, veteran, one of the greatest pitchers, future Hall of Famer, calling an all team meeting for that reason. Like, how is anybody going to come out in a clubhouse like that? It's never going to happen. And that's part of the idea. That's part of why they do it.
Exactly.
To make sure that everybody knows who's in charge.
Exactly.
And it's not the gays, despite what the conservative media would like you to believe. Like, the gays, definitely not in charge.
Right. Like, this whole thing has been, like, very much, like, people trying to paint Catholics as this very oppressed minority. And it's just like not true. The Catholic Church is one of the most powerful institutions in the world. It's just simply not true.
Look how many decades they covered up millions of sexual abuse cases.
Can't Which they are not bringing easy. They are not bringing this energy for. I don't see Clayton Kershaw out here doing the work and donating to victims of Catholic Church sexual abuse.
And I will say, like, I have gotten a lot of pushback on a tweet I did, shockingly, pointing out that Kershaw does a lot of the kind of work on the ground, the feeding the hungry work. And you know what? He does. And you know what? He planned Dodgers Faith and Family Night because he was pissed about Pride and not because he wanted to highlight the work that Christians are doing. And that tells you exactly what they're all in this for.
Exactly.
Well, my thing is, you know, he basically did what Drew Brees did. They hide behind Christianity and family to hide their bigotry. You're bigots. Because no faith says it's okay to hate another group. None. Not a single. It's not in Judaism. It's not in Christianity. It's not in Islam. It's not in Buddhism. But so you're hiding behind faith to justify your bigotry. And that's what it comes down to.
Well, I always point out that, like, Jesus never said anything about gay people.
Nope.
He said a lot about rich people.
Yeah.
Like, a lot. Fan of the rich folk, that guy.
And he said a lot about, you know, the oppressed, the least of my people. What you've done for the least of my people, you've done for me.
I don't remember him checking any of the, like, employment histories of the poor people he fed. That didn't seem to be high on his priority list.
Yeah, like
even the Pope has been more welcoming to the LGBTQ community. The Pope. And so you're gonna tell me the Pope's wrong?
Tell me that Jesus didn't means test his bread?
and I will point out another group that has been pretty darn quiet about this, except for a handful who have been supportive of Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, is nuns. And why?
Literal nuns.
Nuns are doing the work.
Yes.
They are. Yes. It's not Marco Rubio who is, like, you know, going to soup kitchens and, you know, visiting homebound seniors. Like, that's not, you know, Rubio's not doing that.
Nope.
Kershaw's organization probably does some of that. I don't know how many of those visits Kershaw takes on himself, but, you know, but the people who are doing it are nuns and also Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. Like, and that is why they maybe don't totally embrace them. It is still a, like, super conservative group, obviously, but they are not going out of their way to protest it. And in fact, some of them are speaking publicly in favor of the work that they do.
Yes.
And also, as a Catholic, I'm not offended by them. I'm offended that you're using my religion to justify your hate.
Yes.
Because that's not my religion.
That's far more offensive than anything the sisters have done.
Well, the sisters also didn't start from this place of Catholic iconography just randomly. Right. They weren't like, you know what would be fun? A nun thing. I have been involved in various conversations around performances of a certain type that would have started that way, of like, let's do a nun thing. No, it was specifically because of the bigotry that a lot of the organization members themselves experienced in Catholic schools, in Christian environments, which is, like, all of them. And that is why they adopted that approach, that look, that theme, is because of that.
Subversive activism is not effective unless you're making people uncomfortable. That is the point. There is a reason why during the AIDS crisis, of which the sisters were very involved in helping people who were affected by it, by the way, and have been doing this work for decades. This isn't new stuff, right? Anyway, there's a reason why during the AIDS crisis, ACT UP did a die-in a church. because these people were directly responsible for the deaths of countless gay people. And that's violent bigotry. That is what this is a response to. Their right to exist, to live, is literally threatened. And your right to exist and practice your Catholic faith is not threatened by some guys dressing up as drag nuns. It's just simply not. These are not equal grievances.
Well, and then, of course, once Kershaw said he did his own research, but then couldn't back it up with what research he did.
He clearly didn't do any.
No.
He didn't do
I
any.
I think it's safe to say that doing one's own research at this point is a, like, straight up red flag.
Yes.
Yes. And it's just like, it's just incredibly ignorant and frustrating. And, you know, like, again, when you do your faith-based night at the ballpark, which, again, in a vacuum is completely fine, and I have never seen a queer community or person stand up against the idea of a team having a faith-based night once. These are fine in isolation, but when you're doing it in response to a pride night, you are pointedly linking your faith to an anti-LGBTQ stance. You are saying this is what it means to be a Catholic to me.
And all of the, I respect gay people, I have gay friends, all of that nonsense, all of that in the world will not undo the actual hands-on harm that you are doing to that community.
Yeah,
exactly.
And when you put qualifiers on it too, like Bass did.
Yes.
Ugh.
Ugh. Ugh. We'll get to him in a minute.
He sucks.
He sucks. We'll get to him on it in a minute.
Sorry. He deserves his own segment.
Yeah, he does. He does. He sucks. But, you know, coming out also, you know, with a statement about this was not for no reason, but somewhat randomly, because it's like, who asked you, was sadly Trevor Williams, former
a bad Trevor, as it turns out. Trevor. We thought he was a good Trevor.
Yeah,
oh,
we had
straight into bad wrong. Trevor territory now.
We had him among our league of good Trevors, and now the only good Trevor left is Trevor May.
Well, Trevor Hildenberger.
What about Hildenberg?
Hildenberger, yeah. Trevor Hildenberger, also very
sorry.
Good. Okay. Good Trevors. Okay,
so at least
we
have a balance. We're at 50-50.
Yeah. We're 50-50. Anyway, very disappointing to see Trevor Williams. Like, you know, listen, we all knew Trevor Williams has never been shy. He's a Christian. He's very proud Christian, which is fine. But yeah, he came out with an essay about this on Twitter.
It was the longest, like, random bigoted rant I've seen from a baseball player in a long time. That
was
two screen caps.
It was two screenshots worth, and it was really one of those, like, I ain't reading all that. I'm happy for you, though, or sorry that happened. Like,
I read the first paragraph and the last paragraph, and they were awful.
And they're both bad.
They're so bad.
But it was one of those, I'm not going to read the whole statement because it's a load of hogwash, but I think the reason why he tweeted about this now is because the Nationals are playing the Dodgers this week. But it's like, dude, you're on the Nationals. Like, no one asked you about what you think about Dodgers Pride Night, but sure, fine. Go ahead and, like, Marco Rubio this thing and, like, insert yourself where no one asked you. But I'm not going to read the whole statement, but he basically did as a devout Catholic, I'm deeply troubled by the Dodgers' decision to reinvite the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. And it's like, I don't know, Trevor, if I were you, I'd be deeply troubled by your strikeout to walk ratio, but that's just me.
You have other things to worry about here, Trevor.
I'm not deeply troubled about, like, financial inequality. I mean, people are starving on the streets of D.C., Trevor.
I'd be deeply troubled by,
but it doesn't
you know,
seem to deeply trouble him.
Deeply troubled by the rampant domestic violence problem that the league has. I'd be deeply troubled by the rampant racism that exists in this league. You know, there are lots of things to be troubled by in Major League Baseball, but Dodgers Pride Night, which is not even your team's Pride Night, is apparently what he chose to be deeply troubled by and not the Nationals record.
Well, and again, and you know, for all I know, Trevor Williams spends the offseason feeding the poor. But
I hope so.
I hope so too. I hope everybody does. But they don't, because we can look around and see it. But the fact that he's choosing this moment and this issue to make his voice heard, I mean, that says it all. This is what he wants us to know about his beliefs. He's not talking about good works. He's not talking about protecting people who need it. He is just slamming the sisters because that's what his radio shows and cable channels have told him to do. That is the bad thing.
And I think the most ludicrous part was he compared it to being crucified.
He did.
Even Jesus is up there like, buddy. Whoa.
Jesus, slow your roll, buddy.
as we've said already, Jesus would be standing alongside the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence and not with the majority of self-professed Christians and what they supposedly stand for in this country.
Again, as a Catholic, I'm offended. That's blasphemous to me.
Yeah. Like, you should be. Like, that's way more offensive to than anything than the sisters dressing up as nuns. It just is. And I think that, like, the grander thing that I am upset by this, of course, like, on an individual level, I'm upset because Trevor Williams, by all accounts, seemed like a good guy. And, you know, like, he's always been, like, a Christian, and that's fine. And he's been very online and used his platform to say like other thoughtful things in the past. And like, I'm disappointed on a personal level, but beyond that, what this represents to me, Kershaw and Trevor Williams, I guess Kershaw to a greater extent, because he's just a more well-known player and a Hall of Fame bound pitcher and a major like spokesperson in baseball, is just that like we talk about on this podcast all the time, the only way that the culture will change, that this, you know, toxic masculinity based culture, this patriarchal culture, this culture that uplifts abusers, that keeps gay folks closeted, this culture will only change from within the clubhouse when that behavior, being an abuser, for example, will no longer be tolerated. And this feels like a step back in the opposite direction, where a gay player who may have seen the progress, a not out gay player may have seen the progress that's been happening with more and more teams having pride nights, may have felt like, you know, maybe in the near future, like I can come out and it won't be an issue. I feel like is going further into the closet now, seeing this. Like, this is what his peers think. This is what his teammates think. Can you imagine being a gay player on the Nationals, for example, and seeing this and seeing what Trevor Williams tweeted and feeling safe in that clubhouse? You aren't safe in that clubhouse.
Well, no, so Trevor Williams had no issue, like we said, two screenshots worth with his whole chest writing an essay, but not a single person can come out on the other side being supportive of the LGBTQ community. Like, there hasn't been a single tweet from a single ball player except for Robert Stock, and he's not even in the league anymore.
There was a minor league ball player.
Yes, and a minor league
to Bradford's call, but Bradford William Davis called for, can some courageous ball player please stand up and say that they support gay rights, that they support the sisters' work. And one minor league player said, I'm a minor league player, but I support it. And like, that was great. And I commend it, but not a single major league ball player has come out on the other side. We know that players, you know, we know that last year during Pride, Mark Canha and Taiwan Walker in particular were very outspoken in support of the event. And we praised them on this podcast at the time. I am waiting with bated breath to see how certain Mets react this year, because I am nervous that even if Mark Canha holds these views that he supports the LGBTQ plus community, that players like him are going to not feel okay speaking out in favor, and he should be brave and still do it anyway. But this makes it harder. If this is what his
design.
Teammates think.
They want, I mean, that's why Kershaw turned it into a whole team meeting. It's why, you know, people like Kershaw get the mic for times like this, because they want the loudest, most important voices to all be on their side. And the louder and the more prominent those voices are, the harder and, you know, with more repercussions it becomes for anybody else.
And also when you paint yourself as the victim, now it's easier to make yourself look sympathetic and get more people on your side.
Yeah. Like, I mean, forgive me, but given the environment that LGBTQ folks are facing right now, I don't have time for Catholics' hurt feelings about a nun costume. I simply don't. Like, your right to exist is not being threatened. Like, you are not the victim of, like, literal hate crimes and violence day in and day out. People of Jewish faith are having their synagogues defaced with Nazi symbols every day in this country right now. I do not have time for this nonsense. I simply don't, for you to pretend to be oppressed. I don't. I don't have time for it. I won't hear it. I won't platform it. It's just not true.
I was gonna say, as a Catholic, I can't name a single instance where I felt unwelcome or like.
I mean, I'd like to know what major nationwide chains have had to close down their Jesus section because of bomb threats.
Yeah,
like.
Right.
When is that happening? Where are all the cross shirts being taken out of stores because employees have had their lives threatened?
Never.
Where is that happening? Show me. Tell me.
It hasn't. It's just not happening. Like,
they did their own research. They can't tell you where, but they did it. It's happening. Just take their word for it.
Like, what I find especially rich is all the WASPs, like, all the Protestants getting, like, all up in arms about this, too. They've joined the chorus as a Christian, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, like, crapping on Catholics is literally your whole thing. That's what your whole sect is based on. Like, you believe that Catholics belong in the same fiery pit as as gay folks. So I don't know what you are out here about. I certainly don't know what you guys are
enemy
out
of
here
their
about.
Enemy, I suppose.
I guess. But that was like that stuff. I've been having like people in my mentions all day.
Oh yeah, and I've probably the same people in mine.
Yeah, it's been a banner day in our collective mentions. And like some of them, like one of them was like, I was like, oh, I said something about like, oh, why aren't you coming with the same energy for the scandals in the Catholic Church? And they were like, well, I'm not Catholic. And I was like, then why do you care about this? Like, oh gosh. Anyway. Yeah. So this continues to be like deeply, deeply upsetting. And if you want to hear more about this and you want to hear actual queer voices talk about this, please, please, please listen to the most recent episode of Flushing is Burning. Christian and Grace are fantastic. You should be listening to this show already. But they talked about this in their episode this week, which actually just dropped today, Tuesday, as we're recording this. And this show will drop Wednesday. So we're going to have back-to-back episodes about this. And you should listen to Christian and Grace talk about this because they have such a thoughtful and insightful discussion, and you should be listening to them. So, moving on to Anthony Bass, deserves his own segment about this. It's like somewhat related, but it's not the same exact. He's not talking about Dodgers pride, but he's still being a hateful bigot, as it turns out.
He of the popcorn fame.
Yes, he of the popcorn incident.
You may know him from previous episodes, such as getting a flight attendant fired because she wouldn't clean up popcorn that Bass's wife's kids spilled.
Yes.
That's this guy.
That's this guy. So while all this is going down, he did a really hateful Instagram story. It was basically like one of those like anti-LGBTQ plus propaganda videos, and he shared it on his Instagram story, and it's one of those videos where the guy is instructing Christians to boycott Target and Bud Light because those brands, you know, because of those brands like tacit support for LGBTQ rights in the sense that they just like have put rainbows on things and that's just enough to be offensive. Like, here's the thing about like about this, about connecting it back to the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. And here's what we said last time when we talked about this. You give these people an inch, they will take a mile. They will make you believe that if not for the sisters' inclusion, they would be totally supportive of Pride. They are lying. That is not true. Because you have Anthony Bass out here boycotting, sharing a video about a guy saying that you should boycott Target and Bud Light, who basically all they did was do rainbow capitalism. Like, they don't support this in any form. There is except no financial support. Yeah. Like, there is no, like, there is no pride, like, symbol, no, like, support of pride that is acceptable to these people. They would prefer that the Dodgers not have a pride night at all, or their respective teams not have a pride night at all. Make no mistake. This isn't about the sisters. It's, they don't like gay people. That's it. That's the whole thing. So, yeah, Anthony Bass posted this video. And, you know, if I were him, I would just take his L's at this point. Like, the dude
takes a lot of them in the game.
Exactly. Like, my man, you don't have the ERA to be out here. At least Clayton Kershaw has the ERA to be out here. You do not. I don't think either of you should be out here saying these things, but man.
You don't have the clout Clayton Kershaw does.
And you were already in the news for bad reasons, and people are already making fun of you, and now you do this. Like, oh, go on. You're making it too easy. My favorite tweet, like, in response to that was, like, it was basically, like, boycotting Targets. Looks like he's been boycotting Targets all season long.
Yeah.
I was like, damn. Hell yeah. Oh, so good. So yeah, that happened. And then he, of course, so, like, I think that if not him, his PR team, his agent,
it was definitely PR,
whoever, realized that he needs to just take his L's at this point because of how much bad press he's gotten. And so he issued a public apology earlier today. This was the quote. I recognized yesterday I made a post that was hurtful to the Pride community. I can't even get through this with a straight face because he called it the Pride community. It's like, you have never read, like, one article about the LGBTQ community. Anyway, the Pride community, which includes friends of mine. So it's literally like a bingo card.
I have gay friends.
Yep. Bingo card. Check number one, Pride community, not referring to the community correctly. Check number two.
Would like to meet two of said friends and have a conversation with them.
Yeah. Number two, I have gay friends. Which includes friends of mine and close family members of mine. I'm truly sorry for that. I just spoke with my teammates and shared with them my actions yesterday. I apologized to them. And as of right now, I am using the Blue Jays resources to better educate myself and to make better decisions moving forward. The ballpark is for everybody. We include all fans at the ballpark. We want to welcome everybody. That's all I have to say. Okay, whatever.
But then he didn't take questions and then just, like, walked away. It's like, no, you're still a coward.
Yeah, like, I don't. Like, you don't share that stuff by accident. Like, this is just reeks of, like, his agent made him say this so that people would stop yelling at him online. I mean, I guess it's better than not apologizing for it, I suppose. But, like, I don't believe it for a second is what I'll say. Yeah. So,
although, to the surprise of no one, Blake Treinen now has thoughts.
Oh, oh
God. I don't need to hear him.
The worst.
No, you don't. You do not want to hear him.
And so these are, like, so Blake Treinen obviously is not on the Nationals currently, but so we've got a bunch of Nationals because Trevor Williams tweeted, you know, that gobbledygook statement, and Patrick Corbin retweeted it, and we already know.
Oh, he
Patrick
yeah.
Corbin's well established stance on these things. Yeah, he sucks. And Treinen is, like, similarly bad. And he and Corbin are, like, big buddies because Treinen used to also be on the Nationals. Yeah. So I Blake Treinen. Christ.
You don't want to read it.
Not gonna.
It's sickening.
It's gross.
And he even put Bible quotes in there.
All right. We're not reading that on here. Yeah, we're vibe shifting back to good things. We're doing our little sandwich here. So vibe shifting back to good things. Liam Hendricks returned to the mound for the White Sox last night after beating cancer. Hell yeah. This is such a great story.
So glad to see him.
Raise your hand if you cried watching the video.
I certainly will. I got a little choked up. There were
I did too.
A ring of tears occurred.
None I don't think fell. He did too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. He was crying.
Yeah.
Which, how can you not?
I was like, how is he supposed to pitch now? He's crying.
Yeah. Just 5 months after being diagnosed with stage 4 lymphoma, he is back on the mound. Which is
incredible.
Like, just so cool. And side note, Mets should trade for him.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah, bring that guy in.
Yeah.
We are full supportive of that.
We already talked about how the bullpen needs massive improvements, and that would be a massive improvement both in terms of pitching and in terms of vibes. Desperately needed.
Yes.
So yeah, that was a really good thing to see this week. Just really awesome and, you know, really inspirational to his teammates, to the whole game, really. It was really cool.
But also, how stupid is this now? They have to worry, are they going to actually let him enjoy the moment, or is there going to be a pitch clock violation?
Right.
Like, come on. And they did give props to the batter who did not step in the batter's box. I'm not sure who the batter was, sorry. But he wouldn't get into the batter's box until, so that way Hendricks could have his moment, which was like he was aware of what was going on, which was nice to see too.
Yeah,
and it's always nice.
That made me happy. The other kind of baseball news from this week that I want to just touch upon briefly was, you know, other baseball people not covering themselves in glory online. In this case, it's a team Twitter account, the Astros Twitter account.
Ugh.
The Astros being on the wrong side of anything? I cannot believe it.
Shocking, I tell you. Shocking.
Such good folk.
So
there's gambling in this establishment.
The other day the Astros beat up on the Oakland Athletics, no surprise there. as we already talked about, the Oakland Athletics are historically bad this year. And the Astros Twitter account decided to tweet, quote, tens of runs in front of tens of fans, which feels like punching down. A lot.
Yeah, no, that feels like punching down. It is.
Also, I seem to recall a time, not so many years ago, maybe 10 years ago, maybe less, I recall a time when the Astros once got a 0 Nielsen rating.
Yeah. Like, you tanked once too, buddy, there and you were really bad there for a long, long time, and there
zero.
Were tens of fans.
Talk about the pot calling the kettle. Holy crow. Wow.
Wowie, wowie. So, yeah, that's not ideal. I they took it down, the tweet, so that's good.
Yeah, but quietly deleting it, though, and not even saying, like, oh, that tweet was in poor taste or something. Like, they just quietly deleted it. Come on.
They dirty deleted. The Astros acting in poor taste.
Again, this is my shock
face. Shocking. So, yeah, I mean, like, it's a thing, like, don't, like, it's one thing when, like, you know, it's just, you know, a bad team that's not drawing well and you want to dunk on them to get easy, like, internet points or whatever. That's shitty in and of itself. Like, but they know, everyone knows what the A's current situation is. And everyone knows why the fans aren't attending the games. And it's not just because the team is bad. Like, it's because of the craven, like, greed of their ownership group that is not only making the team bad on purpose, but is relocating them to another city.
Yeah, like the
where I'm sure they will all of a sudden decide that they want to pay players.
Yeah.
Well, and the thing is, the Astros were the last largest shame of the game. And now they're making fun of now the current shame of the game. Like, you're not better than them. You were involved in your own scandal. And we're, I mean, you didn't get punished for it, like, should have been.
The A's aren't cheating.
Yeah, so don't act like you're all holier than thou now, Astros.
Yeah, it's just really crappy to say that about like a fan base who
you know
full well why they aren't going to the games, and it's not just because the team is bad. Like, enough, stop it.
Although, can we talk about a good tweet about how, I don't know if you saw it, the Cleveland Hot Dogs tweeted Backstreet Boys lyrics going back to November.
Oh my god, incredible. I love that. I had not seen this, but I am happy to know that it exists.
Yeah, the first word of every tweet going back to November 6th was, I want it that way.
Incredible. I love it.
It was awesome.
Good.
So there is fun ways to use your social media here, sports teams.
Good.
And I'm not just saying that because it's Backstreet Boys.
Good. That's a good way to end the segment, with a good tweet to balance out the bad tweet.
The bad tweet, yes.
We're doing our sandwiches. It's a double decker. It's a whole club sandwich.
The club.
Exactly. But to end the show on a happy note, we will end the show like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Linda Cerevich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is I saw Once Upon a One More Time, which is
amazing.
A new Broadway play that's all Britney Spears music. So, you had my attention when I heard that. I was like, okay, sure. But then you dig a little deeper, and it's about Disney princesses in a book group. And I was like, okay, somebody made this just for me. So
Linda Cerevich, the musical.
Yes, basically. I was like, so.
I would watch that. I'm just putting that out there.
It's still in previews right now, but it's incredible. I mean, it's ridiculous, but you will have the best time at the theater you'll ever have. And there was a lot of feminism in there, so again, hello, right up my alley. Justin Guarini plays Prince Charming and steals the show. He was incredible, and I won't spoil anything, but Circus and Toxic bring the house down. Like, having that theater experience where the crowd's really into it is like, it's just worth it for that. And like I said, it's ridiculous, but you will have so much fun. And especially if you really like Britney Spears, just going down. And then they made a joke about Curious, which was her perfume that I always wore in high school and college. So then I had to go to my parents' house to see if I still had a bottle. And I do.
Oh, my God. Amazing. I remember that perfume, and I had totally memory holed it. And that's like, that just came out of the depths of my like mind palace.
Yeah. So I'm like, I might start wearing that again. Is it cool again? I don't know, but I will make it cool again. I found a code online. So I paid $60 for orchestra seats. We were like 10 rows back. And it's in the Majestic Theater, which is one of the more modern theaters. So you get like a lot of like light show involved, and like, and all the dancing is like basically straight out of like her music video. So it's a lot of like hip hop moves, and one guy was like break dancing, and oh man, it was so much fun. It was perfect. I had such, and we had Cuban food before, which I love.
Ooh, so I love Cuban food.
Yeah. Cuban food, go to Havana Central and then go see the play, and you will have a very good night.
Amazing. Love it. Love Britney Spears. Love Broadway. So I would love this, I'm sure.
You would. I highly recommend. If you want to go see it, I'll go again. I don't care.
Heck yeah, let's do it. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
I'm really keeping it extremely exciting. I say, have y'all seen the weather lately?
Been great.
It has been like not a cloud in the sky. Like mid to upper 70s, you know, and I was, my daughter had her field day today, which is out at Randall's Island, where there's like nary a tree to be seen. And I was, you know, a little trepidatious about standing out in the sun all day.
but it was like 72 with a lovely breeze. And I just feel like it doesn't get better than this. It's like, it's that month where the city smells like flowers and not garbage. And it's, I don't know, it's just magical. It's just like, it's playground weather. It's walk from, you know, like take the bus one stop less so that you could just get a block of walking in. Like it's that kind of weather where you just want to be outside in it all the time. And definitely like turning up all the good vibes.
I love that. And field day was always like one of the things I looked forward to most at school. I loved field day. It was
I will
my
call
favorite.
You for the next field day. It went badly.
So much fun.
This is like the perfect weather when there's no humidity, but it's still warm with a light breeze. Like this is my ideal weather.
I will say that 2023 sucks in a lot of ways, but one column in which it gets points compared to some previous years of recent past is we got a real spring.
Yeah,
it's true.
In past years, I feel like it went
raining finally.
In past years, I feel like it went straight from winter to summer. Like it just like, you know, was freezing and then it just got hot and humid.
But this
and...
has been some like baller solid spring weather.
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I was passing spring. A neighbor. I was coming in and the neighbor was going out and the neighbor was like, do you think I should grab a jacket? I'm like, you could have a jacket or you could have no jacket. You get to decide, not the weather.
Exactly.
Because the weather is perfect.
Yeah.
It is what you want it to be.
Yes. So good. So my walk-off win for this week, I actually have two of them. Because I had a banner weekend last weekend. It was great. So on Saturday, I got a new tattoo, which was very exciting. It's my fourth tattoo. So for something that people, listeners may not know about me is that I am a tattooed person. I like tattoos. I like getting them. And so this is my fourth one. It's on my calf and it's of a scene from BoJack Horseman, which is my favorite TV show of all time. And I love it and I'm obsessed with it and it makes me happy. Stone the Crow Tattoo, Christian at Stone the Crow Tattoo in Rockville did a fantastic job with it. It's actually the first session of two. I'm going back in July to get a little color added to it because part of the tattoo involves like a night sky galaxy effect because the scene from the show is BoJack and another character, Sarah Lynn, like looking, they're in a planetarium. And so they're like looking up at like a space background. And so right now, all I have done is like the black and gray. And so the night sky is kind of just like black, but I'm going to get color added in like blues and greens and purples. So that really looks like a galaxy. Which is going to be really, really cool. But it already looks great, even without the color. So I'm so psyched of what it's going to look like when it's finished. But yeah, so that's my first walk-off win. Very excited. I'm very happy with how it turned out. And then my second walk-off win is that on Sunday, I went to my first Washington Spirit game. Washington Spirit are the NWSL team, the women's soccer team, professional soccer team in DC. And I had an amazing time and it was great. The vibes were amazing. The game ended in a tie, so baseball fans may not be familiar or adapted to such situations in sports.
I mean, to be fair, our alternative is a ghost runner, so ties are actually fine.
Exactly. So yeah, the game did end in a tie, but it was like a really exciting game. It was really like well contested.
It wasn't a nothing-nothing tie, was it?
No, it was 1-1.
Okay.
And it was a very exciting game. I had a great time. I was with Michael and my friend Sarah. And we had an awesome time. And I just feel like I will say that just like, so the Spirit average attendance, this season has been about 10,000, which is very good, first of all, for compared to what it's been in the past. Like it is, the NWSL is growing very much as a league, which you love to see. You love to see women's sports thriving and growing. But it's about half the average attendance that the Nationals have in comparison this season. Even with the team being bad, they're still drawing about 20,000 per game. That's an average. Obviously, some nights it's way less, some nights it's way more. If there's a promotion, whatever. But I will say that Audi Field, which is where the Spirit play, also where DC United, the men's team, plays, was twice as loud as I have ever heard Nats Park be. And I've been to countless games at Nats Park, and not just Mets Nats games either, although that makes up the majority of games I've been to at Nats Park. I've been to plenty of Nats games, not just when the team's been bad in the past few years, but before that, when they were good, like in 2015, that era of the Nats. The Spirit game was so loud. Like, the fans that were there were diehards. They were all so into it. And, like, I know that baseball is considered to be, like, among the major sports, probably, like, the most family-friendly, or, like, at least, like, you know, I feel like you see the most kids at baseball games compared to, like, NBA games or NFL games, for example, or even, like, hockey games, although I haven't been to as many hockey games. Linda can say different, but I feel like of the four, like, major leagues, like, in America, baseball has the most, like, family-friendly atmosphere. I have never seen, like, more children at a sporting event than I saw at this Spirit game. Like, little girls everywhere in their, like, local travel team jerseys, and it just made me so happy. Like, I was like, oh my god, this is so cute.
Aww.
Like, they were so into it, and it just made me, like, it made my heart sing. Like, it was so great, and it was just such a great environment. And it was just like, I just feel like the stark contrast, especially today with all the stuff going on with Dodgers Pride Night and the response to that and the way the league is acting and the players are acting and stuff like that. Like, the contrast between how MLB is with this and how NWSL is with this is just like night and day. Like, we were at Audi Field. There was a huge section, like, of the, you know, the huge section of, like, hardcore fans right behind the goal. And there was a huge trans flag and a huge pride flag and drums, and, like, the whole atmosphere was happy and excited. And this next weekend is the Spirit's, like, Pride Night. And they're having a drag show at halftime, and they're, like, not even, like, pressed about it. Like, that was not a question. That was not some sort of crisis they had. There was not a debate about this, about who to include. There was not any sort of hand-wringing about it. They are having a drag show. And so it's just, like, it is great to see, like, women's leagues thriving and women's leagues embracing pride, and just the family-friendly atmosphere, and just, like, it was just so great, and I can't wait to go back. I'm so excited. I loved it. I had so much fun. So that's a major walk-off win for me. It's just shout out to the Washington Spirit for being a great organization, and so much fun to be at your games. I can't wait to go to more. So that does it for the show this week. You can support our work. Go to patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. Please consider supporting our work. You get access to bonus content. You get access to our Patreon exclusive Discord and a bunch of other goodies. You can follow Home Run Applesauce on Twitter and Instagram at HR Applesauce. You can follow this show on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I'm at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Cerevich.
And you, Maggie?
At Maggie162.
You can subscribe to our pods wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search Home Run Applesauce. You get our entire feed right there. If you subscribe, including Flushing is Burning, please listen to it. If you can, please rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go Mets, and don't forget, there's no crying.